Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the long week, the mini bye, the extra time, which always feels great when you're out having a Maryland Crab Cake on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. And I'm playing at Nick's Grandstand Grill on Friday and playing at Coco's on Wednesday with our mayor, Brandon Scott. But alas, it will be a bad vibe around here for the better part of 10 days. Luke Jones joins us now. He'll be in Owings Mills. All of our Ravens coverage brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. And, you know, we talk about the extra time. You talk about the short week. You talk about the Dolphins having to play. Defensively, what we saw from the Ravens on Sunday night, the tackling, the problems, blown coverages, all of it sort of reared its ugly head all at the same time. And I thought it was sort of weird that the kid they were trying to trade for was the one who made the big play and ran literally Keystone Cops through the entire offense to get to the end zone and then got flopped on, that if Eric DaCosta would have had his way, he would have been in a purple helmet on Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people took notice of that. Xavien Howard, it was always going to be very difficult for them to figure that out from a financial standpoint. On top of compensation, you're going to have to give up to acquire a Pro Bowl corner. But
another Marcus Peters.
I think what's really complicated about looking at... Yeah, sure. But, you know, this is the problem when you have a little over $1 million in cap space. I mean, you just don't have a whole lot of flexibility. You have to be very creative. And sometimes you can work it out, as the LA Rams have continued to, and other times you can't to figure out these deals. But, you know, you look at the defense, it's such a complicated performance to break down because they did so many things really well. Shut down the run. Adafe Owe and Justin Houston, I thought, played very well. Calais Campbell, very disruptive. You know, Patrick Queen, I thought, had a nice night overall. They played really good football defensively for most of the night. When you consider the fact that, all right, the final score, you look at it and say 22 points. Well, one of the touchdowns came on a fumble recovery, you know, a fumble return. That's not on the defense. As you mentioned, maybe if Xavien Howard's playing for you, it's, you know, a different story in that regard. But I mean, this really comes down to, if you really want to be simplistic about it, this comes down to three plays for the Ravens defense on Thursday night. Late in the first half, it's 3-3, less than a minute to go, 52 yards to Isaiah Ford. I'm not sure what happened there with Anthony Averett passing him off, and Geno Stone did not pick him up, but guys running free with under a minute to go. I mean, that's 3 points. Miami had no business scoring with less than a minute to go, and you bust a coverage and they get 3 points, and they're fortunate they kept them out of the end zone. So you look at that, you look at late in the third quarter, it's first and 20, 6-3, and 35 yards to Jalen Waddle. Brandon Stevens, a rookie. Oh, Jalen Waddle, you know, one of the first round pick, top 10 pick, going up against the third round safety, making his third career NFL start. Not going to say that, you know, that's shocking, but on first and 20 to close the third quarter leads to another field goal. In a game like that, those 3 points are huge. But ultimately, the Ravens score late. There's 3.5 minutes to go. It's 15-10. You're already thinking in your head, as much as this game was ugly, a dog, you're looking at this thing and you're thinking, I was even thinking at the time, they're going to get a stop here and Lamar Jackson's going to score a touchdown. And I don't know what I'm going to be able to say about this game that's overly complimentary other than just they pulled another rabbit out of their hat. Well, instead, Albert Wilson goes in motion and no one picks him up. 64 yards, total bust of a coverage, leads to a touchdown, ball game. And you look at that, they gave up 350 yards on the night. 43% of those yards came on those three plays. Now, those plays count. Let's be very clear. I'm not trying to, you know, Dean Pease would do this a lot of times. Well, if you take away this play and that play and this play, you know, we look at what we did. Those plays count, and those plays are absolute crushers. And that's what's so frustrating about this defense is the big plays just continue to kill them. This is not a case where they're just, you know, they're giving up 10 yards, 12 yards, 14 yards, 10 yards, 11 yards, 8 yards. You know, it's not like teams are moving down the field and driving, you know, going 80 yards on 13 plays, and you're just bending and bending and bending and bending and bending, and then finally they get in the end zone. This is a case where you're stuffing them and you're stuffing them and you're stuffing them, and then boom, give up a long one. And we're just seeing that over and over and over. I mean, it's very frustrating because a lot of these plays, you look back at it and say, what's the deal? Is it communication? Are these guys not knowing what they're supposed to be doing? Is there something, some kind of disconnect with the coaching and then it's not carrying over to the field? And chances are it's a combination of all those things. And yeah, you miss Marcus Peters. There's no question about that. And they're probably going to miss Deshaun Elliott because, you know, as much as I like Brandon Stevens' potential, he's a rookie. And, you know, we saw that with Jalen Waddle beating him. Now, Jalen Waddle might have beaten Deshaun Elliott on that play, so I don't want to make it all about him, but you're just seeing these big plays that are absolutely killing them, and really they ruin what would be an excellent defensive performance. I mean, again, I'll continue to harp on the fact that, I mean, one of Miami's two touchdowns were on a turnover, so you can't look at this game and be furious with the defense. But you can be furious with the defense in those three critical moments that led to two field goals and a touchdown. And, well, when you're talking about a 22-10 final, there you go. I mean, there is a difference in the game right there. So,
well, you look at the final, and it feels like they got their ass kicked, and it was a 3-3 game, a 6-3. It was sitting there, you know, and all night long you felt like, again, I've said this all day, and I'll say probably all week, it felt like Lamar was going to go into the phone booth with 5 minutes left to go. It felt like they were already halfway there, right? I mean, it just felt like they were going to win by hair, get out of there. We were all going to pat them on the back and say, you know, okay, you're on 3 days rest, whatever. Boy, that gear never came at the end of the game, and the gear never came because at the key point in the game, to your point, it was the defense that broke down. We spent a lot of time complaining about second and long and third and long and ineffectiveness of the offensive line and where's the running game and who are the running backs and how Alejandro Villanueva would be the left tackle for no one by choice who would think that they're a Super Bowl contender. But then you get after the defense a little bit in the end and you say, if they would have played the game we expect them to play, this wouldn't be the issue. But you start taking Peters out. You start taking Elliott out. You start taking communication out on the back end. And guys run free twice. And even young quarterbacks can make you pay for that, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just that's why I said it's frustrating from the standpoint of how well you played against the run and how many times you forced them to go three and out. I mean, look at the drives there. I mean, you know, it's not as though the Dolphins were fantastic offensively by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, you look at their drive chart, you know, their very first drive, five and out, three and out, three and out. Then they get the field goal in the second quarter, six plays and they pick up one first down and punt. I've talked about the end of the first half, how critical that was, giving up the 52 yarder to Isaiah Ford. But, you know, you come out of the second half, punt, 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 and then you give up the play to Waddle, field goal, another punt. And again, your offense finally breaks through. You know, you have the play, the touchdown to Mark Andrews that, you know, Miami kind of stopped. You know, there have been some questions about whether it sounded like there was a whistle. I mean, I don't know if, you know, a fan had a whistle, whatever happened, but it's right there. It's 15-10. And there's plenty of time if your defense makes a stop. Lamar Jackson in the offense has plenty of time, as bad as it was. Score a touchdown, you go home and you say, wow, that was really ugly. And yeah, we still have these issues that we've talked about over and over and over, but we won and we're 7-2. And now we have a mini bye, and now we can gear up for the Bears game and then all those tough games to follow. But, you know, guy goes in motion. There's nothing complicated about it. Goes in motion and no one picks him up. I mean, it's, you know, we know the Ravens play man almost exclusively. I mean, it's rare when they're playing zone. I mean, and they do, but no one picked him up. And I don't know if it's Patrick Queen there. I don't know if it's the safety. I mean, Chuck Clark way later, to me, he looked like the guy that was just, you know, your deep center fielder then trying to run him down. So I don't think it was on him. I don't know that.
Well, you got Brandon Stevens running around there all night too. And, you know, and you're bringing in guys and you're bringing him in on 3 days and there were no real walkthroughs and run throughs and there was none of that. And it only takes one play.
Yeah, there is. But I think what's so disappointing is it hasn't just been the young guys. I mean, we've seen Marlon Humphrey blow assignments this year. We've seen
he hasn't been very good this year. You know, I mean, all of this, I'm going to strip the ball and take the ball away, and I'm Revis Island, and put me in the Hall of Fame, and I'm all of that, right? I don't know. He's not playing the way he was playing 3 years ago. That's for sure.
No, but I agree with that. I mean, compared to his standard, and look, I've been a big Marlon Humphrey guy. You know, play on the field from the time he was really a rookie, but especially his second year, the year he was voted team MVP, actually. But yeah, for compared to his standard, he hasn't been great. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, we've seen Chuck Clark have issues. And this is where I say, I don't want to pick on Brandon Stevens too much, because Deshaun Elliott had issues. You know, he had inconsistent play, and we've seen these guys miss tackles. So that's what's so disappointing to me. You can talk about Marcus Peters all you want. You can talk about LJ Fort all you want. You can talk about Deshaun Elliott now all you want. You can talk about Derek Wolf all you want. But veteran, established players, whether you're talking about a Pro Bowl player like Marlon Humphrey or just guys that have been starters for multiple years in this defense, they've all been guilty of giving up big plays or missing tackles at the wrong time or taking a poor angle. Or, you know, even though their run defense overall hasn't been a major problem this year, you know, those times where, you know, we saw Dalvin Cook, you know, with a couple, what, I think 95 of his yards, of his 110 yards came on, what, three plays or whatever it was. So, I mean, it's just, but those plays count, and those plays are absolutely killers. I mean, you know, you talk about every play in a game relating to your win probability. I mean, these were absolutely crushers, you know, crushing plays that they gave up on Thursday night. So you can talk about all the good plays, the many, many good plays they made over the course of the night. But those three plays that I broke down that I mentioned, there's a difference in the game right there. It's two field goals and a touchdown right there. But mainly because of those three plays. I mean, those are massive plays that they gave up in really bad spots. I mean, you can't give up a 52-yard completion with under a minute to go in the first half. You can't give up a 35-yard catch on first and 20. You know, you certainly can't bust a coverage when there's 3.5 minutes to go and your offense just got you back to within 5 points and you give up a 64-yard completion. You just can't have those plays. But we've talked about it every single week with this defense, and that's what's so frustrating. And that's why you look at the defense, and you know, they've been last. You know, they were 31st going into this week, but they've been right at the bottom in passing yards. It's been because of missed tackles and miscommunication. And it's something that I understand. If it were just Anthony Averett playing very poorly in place of Marcus Peters, and you'd say, all right, yeah, three-time Pro Bowl corner being replaced by a fourth-year guy that was a fourth-round pick and has been a backup.
Yeah, you're going to get stung at some point, right?
But that has not been how it's played out. This is a highly paid, deep, supposedly deep, talented secondary, and it hasn't played like it. And they've tackled poorly, and they've busted coverages. And it's something that we talked about a lot early in the Minnesota game. You know, when they give up the big play on third down to Justin Jefferson. You know, there's just been way too much of that. And I'm sorry, Marcus Peters wasn't the only great member of that secondary. So yeah, Marlon Humphrey needs to step it up, and Chuck Clark needs to step it up, and you know, Tavon Young needs to step it up, although, you know, leaves the game with a foot injury, and we'll see what's going to happen there. And, you know, we're not seeing much of Jimmy Smith. You know, is Jimmy Smith, you know, do they think he's washed up? Is he hurt? Is he slower? You know,
well, you thought we're saving him for the Miami game, but that wasn't the case, right? We thought we're saving Tyson Williams for the Miami game. That wasn't the case.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, there are a lot of questions to ask yourself. And, you know, there was a lot of good on Thursday night defensively, but, you know, it doesn't matter when you give up 151 yards on three plays, and those three plays almost directly lead to points. I mean, those were the key plays in each of those scoring drives for Miami. So,
there definitely was a different energy with Tua too, right? I mean, like, as much as he's been bounced around, comes into a game where there's an opportunity to win, look good, he was kind of like trying to sling it around a little bit. I mean, there was energy there for them and for that franchise in a way that they don't usually get it. And it almost woke me up at one point when I heard bum, 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 bum. And I heard like the Ravens fans all went crazy on Seven Nations. And I'm like, oh my God, the Dolphins people don't know that that's sort of the Ravens song. And I thought, sort of sound like a Ravens home game or whatever. Boy, the Dolphins and the fan base, it was way too exciting at the end for the Dolphins people. And there was an energy they had right away. And I tweeted about it on the first drive. They were hitting out of the gate. It was very obvious. They were like, these guys played 70 minutes. They got off the plane. It's 80 degrees here. Let's take the wind out of them early. And you look up and it's a 3-3 game that all of a sudden becomes something else because of this breakdown at the 2-minute warning. And in the second half, it never came together. The Ravens never got their legs. And that's a tribute to the Dolphins because the 2-7 team, youngish coach trying to figure it out, youngish team, trade rumors, all of that. Team stinks. They're not going anywhere. You know, it was their Super Bowl, and they were celebrating accordingly. If they felt like a college team, if you would have put it on, right, if you would have watched them.
Yeah, I mean, and that's where, you know, as much as we've talked about what the Ravens didn't do, and that's what we're going to focus on, and as we should. I mean, we're talking about a 6-2 team going up against a team that had two wins, a team that just won their second game despite the fact they turned it over five times against a lousy Houston team. But yeah, you give them credit from the standpoint of, you know, they played in kind of a fearless way, right? Defensively. I mean, you know, they blitzed someone from the secondary. I think I saw on half of Lamar Jackson's dropbacks. I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, he threw the ball how many times on Thursday night? I mean, he threw the ball a lot because the Ravens were behind and they weren't running the ball very well. So, you know, of his 43 pass attempts and then four sacks, they were blitzing someone from the secondary. I mean, a very high percentage of those. You know, that takes some stones. That takes some stones to do that against Lamar Jackson, knowing that if he breaks free, he could run for 80 yards on you. You know, we saw what he did in the open field against the Bengals 2 years ago. We see it on a weekly basis, what he does against fronts. I mean, you know, he had a couple examples where he avoided a sack and, you know, didn't make a play necessarily, but we know what he can do in terms of his escapability. So, you know, they played in a fearless way, and even some examples of times where I thought they could be a little more aggressive, like what they, you know, on the one instance where they punted when I thought they could have gone for it, they punt the ball down to the 1 yard line. You know, I mean, you know, that was an instance where I would have said, hey, be aggressive, you know, go for the jugular here. And, you know, they didn't, but then they punt it down to the 1 yard line. So, you know, and that was, you know, ironically, that was when the Ravens ended up driving 99 yards and scoring a touchdown. Although certainly a couple penalties went in their favor there. That second roughing the passer on Lamar, still scratching my head about that one a little bit. But, you know, you do give them credit because, you know, whether this, you know, I don't know if necessarily they were hyped to play the Ravens as much as there's a chance for them to play in primetime. You know, they're not a team that's getting a lot of primetime games. And, you know, they were a team that actually had some expectations this year coming off of a 10-win season. And
they haven't had much to celebrate. So when they had something to celebrate, they celebrated.
Yeah. So, you know, you give them credit, but at the same time, you know, this game to me, way more about the Ravens than the Dolphins. And, you know, I would think anyone who's looking at this objectively would kind of say, what the heck happened here? You know, I mean, this is a Ravens team that everyone was singing their praises on NFL Network and people saying they're the best team in the AFC and people laughing at what happened to the Bills in Jacksonville. And well, the Ravens did the same thing in Miami. So who's it going to be next week? You know, we'll talk about, you know, we'll reconvene after the weekend's over and we'll look at the schedule next week. But, you know, is anyone good in the AFC? I have no idea at this point. There are some decent teams and the Ravens are decent at the very least. You know, I'm not saying they're bad, but at some point in time, you feel like the cream has to rise to the top, but I don't know. I mean, it just feels like all these teams are flat soda or something. I don't know. I mean, it's very strange, but that's why everyone loves it. That's why everyone tunes in, and you know, we'll see what happens next week. You know, Ravens go to Chicago, and who knows? Maybe they'll score five touchdowns in the first 20 minutes and they win by 40 points.
Dude, I was going to say, at least there will be pizza next week in Chicago, and I'm going to see some friends out in Chicago. So it appears as though I'm making it to Chicago this week. If I can learn to sit for an hour, hour and a half, my physical therapy's coming together. I want to thank Luke. We stayed up late on Thursday night doing double duty here this week and doing a lot of football talk around here and eating a lot of crab cakes. I feel bad that I wasn't in Miami, but certainly not with the outcome on Thursday night and the weather and all of that. And I felt like stone crabs. And I'm like, yeah, man, I've had crab cakes all week long. I left a crab cake at Fadley's. I got to run back there and pick it up at some point. Some mac and cheese from Wednesday. We had great conversations there. Ben Jealous joined us through Vignaraj. We also did a great recon with Damie Hahn talking about crabs, crab cakes, and crab cakes for the holidays and the Today Show and all of that good stuff. That was Wednesday. Friday, Nick's Grandstand Grill and Timonium. Leonard Raskin going to join us. Raskin Global pushing through and bringing him back from Ohio State this week. Jim Reese, my pal from Offutt Kerman, going to stop by. And we're going to eat the famous Nick's Crab Cake from Cross Street, now at the Grandstand Grill in Timonium. We'll be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're going to be playing again on Wednesday next week, doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Coco's with our mayor, Brandon Scott, as well as State Senator Corey McRae. I think Mike Ricigliano, your favorite and my favorite sports cartoonist and paper mache expert of all things Bob Irsay, will be at Coco's. Hi to Marcella. We're finally going to get there. It's been a long time since I've had a Coco's crab cake. I think I've had one Coco's crab cake, maybe two in my life, about 20 years ago. It's been a long, long time. We will be in Abingdon on Black Friday at Conrad's. We will be at Pappas in Cockeysville on Friday, December the 3rd. Is that right? Is that the right date, the 3rd, or is that the 2nd? I want to get that date right, make sure I don't screw that up because I'm a mess with calendar dates. It is the 3rd. So there you go. So I'm not too far off. December 3rd, we'll be at Pappas's. Then on the 9th, Thursday, we're going to be at the Beaumont kicking off my 30th anniversary. We're going to find some time for Costas. We're going to find some time for Nacho Mamas and Mamas on the Half Shell. We're going to be getting all the way around the Beltway and doing stuff, including with our friends at Ruth's Chris for our 30th anniversary. He is Luke. You can follow his journey out to Owings Mills all week long as we prepare for the Chicago Bears and a little red zone here, eating some crab cakes, getting our way through some pumpkin ice cream with our friends at Wise Market. So make sure you're doing that and preparing for a beautiful Thanksgiving. I am thankful for the football. I was not thankful for the football on Thursday night, but I'll get over it and red zone myself into a crab cake or two. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.